We'll, if it's in the record, we'll find it. The next case is 04-285, State of Ohio versus Thomas James Reese.
Good morning.
May I begin?
I'd like to, if I could, reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time there on the clock.
May it please the court, my name is Luane Annis, and I'm representing the appellant in this case, the state of Ohio. We are here today asking this court to reverse a decision of the 11th District Court of Appeals, wherein a pro se defendant had his conviction on two attempted murder counts thrown out, plus a variety of other charges, because after proceeding pro se, he waived his right to a jury trial in favor of a bench trial, and because the trial court did not, quote, give him opportunity to consult with counsel as per statute. The statute in question is Ohio Revised Code 2945.05. This court has looked at this issue a number of times and has essentially concluded that strict compliance with this statute is required. The state is here to tell you today that the Common Pleas Court in this matter did strictly comply with the statute involved in this case. Mr. Reese was his own counsel, and I don't mean to sound like I'm being a smart aleck here or anything, but he obviously had opportunity to consult with himself. He had waived his right to have any other counsel on this matter and was proceeding pro se. There is absolutely nothing in the record to indicate that he made any effort to withdraw that status as a pro se defendant, that he wanted an attorney at any point in the proceedings after he waived them.
Counsel, the defendant, the pro se defendant, there's no argument that the court did not properly inquire as to his knowledgeability and decision in proceeding pro se.
Correct.
That's not on the table here.
That is absolutely not on the table, and the 11th District as much as conceded that point, yes.
And then the counsel was on a standby status.
Correct.
The licensed attorney who was originally assigned to this case was on standby.
Correct.
And my understanding is the attorney did not participate in the bench.
On this particular day, Your Honor, that he formally went to the bench and finally signed the actual form that appears in the file.
No, the waiver of a jury trial.
Correct.
Yes.
The day that was signed. No, you are correct. Attorney Consoldane, name does not appear in the record, and we do not know that he in any way interjected his opinion on that day. However, I would quickly remind the court that Attorney Consoldane, while he was still on the case, well, the defendant had voiced his opinion to proceed pro se, but before he actually formally waived his right to an attorney, Mr. Consoldane was with him in court. This is in February, I believe at the 7th or 8th pretrial. And Mr. Consoldane went on record when he said, I want to waive my jury trial. He said, on the record, I don't think Mr. Reese should do that. So not only did Mr. Consoldane have an opportunity to consult with his client on this issue, he put it on the record that he did not feel that Mr. Reese should proceed with a single judge rather than the traditional jury trial.
But that doesn't tell us, does it, whether the defendant here had an opportunity to consult with Mr. Consoldane. That was sometime before the defendant actually signed the waiver of the jury trial, isn't that correct? several months. I forget what there were some. There were what, 9 pretrials here, 7 or 8 pretrials.
Well, Judge, they did not put it on the record. I would acknowledge that point. That, yeah, Mr. Reese and I have sat down and we've discussed this. Those words do not appear in the record. But when Mr. Consoldane appears with this client and tells the court in open court on the record, I don't think he should waive his jury trial, then it is apparent that obviously Mr. Consoldane has voiced an opinion, which is contrary to what Mr. Reese wanted to do.
Well, but that doesn't seem to be the issue under the statute, is it? The statute says there's arraigned. After the defendant has been arraigned and has had an opportunity to consult with counsel, whatever that means, has
right.
an opportunity, could have had an opportunity for days, weeks, we don't, and the statute, that wording is certainly open-ended. So we have to give definition to it, I guess. And my question is, when does the opportunity have to occur? Does it need to occur at the time or virtually simultaneously with when the defendant signs the jury waiver, or can it occur weeks or months before that? Is that one of the issues we should be deciding here?
Oh, I believe, yes, Your Honor, that is correct, that the court is in a position here where you need to define that language, the opportunity to consult with counsel. But the state would submit to you that the way it's worded in the statute, in that it says after arraignment and has had opportunity to consult with counsel, the statute does not say contemporaneous with or simultaneous with the defendant standing there in open court signing the jury waiver. In this particular case, Mr. Consoldane had been on this case for 7 full months. This was the 7th pretrial when he was summarily dismissed by Mr. Reese. And the statute does not say that this all has to occur all at the same time. Obviously, the arraignment didn't occur on this day. The arraignment had occurred months earlier. And there was obviously interplay between Mr. Consoldane and Mr. Reese because Mr. Consoldane had gone to the jail. He had engaged in discovery. Mr. Reese put on the record, gee, I think you ought to be filing a motion to suppress, although there wasn't anything to suppress. I mean, there was obviously a lot of give and take between this particular client and Mr. Consoldane. So there was opportunity to consult with counsel.
Isn't another question that is equally as important to our determination here is, does this statute apply to a pro se defendant who has received court inquiry into his status as a pro se defendant and has then conducted the case, pretrials, et cetera, and everything that flows from that point forward, obligated to consult with an attorney prior to a jury waiver?
I'm going to say, Your Honor, that, well, first of all, this statute precedes the Ferretta case. And in the state's opinion, what has occurred here is, through the 11th District, an absolute violation of Mr. Reese's rights pursuant to Ferretta, which is to represent himself and to make his own decisions. And I have a feeling this is just one of those things that has sort of sat on the books for a number of years. And, you know, it's never been addressed with the issue of Ferretta in mind. Ferretta says you have a right to be your own counsel. And I dare say that had the trial court thrusted an attorney upon Mr. Reese at that point, on that day in March when he came in and he waived his jury counsel, we'd be here for the opposite reasons. And I'd be sitting at this table over here, and I think I'd be the losing party.
That isn't really what is required, is it? All that would be required would be for the trial court to say to the defendant, Mr. Reese, before he signs the waiver, have you consulted with the standby counsel on the consequences, even though the judge did tell him what the consequences are, but the statute seems to say have counsel do it. Just simply say, have you consulted with Mr. Consoldane, before signing this waiver? That's really all that would be required in the statute, is it not? Not imposing. There's a standby lawyer there, or he's had a standby lawyer that the trial court ordered to be in effect. And isn't that all that would be required? He's permitted to go ahead, certainly, and he did. Would try the case on his own, pro se. So there would be no imposition of a lawyer representing him in the normal course by simply, the trial court simply saying, have you consulted with Mr. Consuldane before you sign the waiver?
Well, if I may respectfully disagree, I think when the statute says consult with counsel and you are your own counsel, that it would be, Your Honor, a needless exercise to tell a pro se defendant to go consult with counsel over any issue, be that issue the jury waiver, be that issue whether or not you're going to cross-examine your own witnesses or the state's witnesses, call your own witnesses on your own behalf. There are a number of areas where, you know, the standby counsel could have been consulted should Mr. Reese so have desired, but he didn't in this case. And furthermore, and this is what I think makes this a bad case to take in on this issue, is he had not only waived his right to counsel, he had waived his right to private counsel, both public and private, and finally, he had his attorney, Mr. Consuldane, when he was still sort of in that ambivalent period there between when he said, I want to waive, and when he formally signed off on an attorney, he had Mr. Consuldane saying that that was particularly a bad decision for him. And if there had been that opportunity, as you're suggesting, to go back and consult with Mr. Consuldane, that's exactly what he would have told him for now the second time is, I don't think you should waive your jury trial. It's, I think, just a very unnecessary exercise when you consider the fact that this defendant went forward and said that he did not want the services of the public defender. He wanted to go it on his own, and he made the decision that he also wanted his own a single bench trial rather than a 12-person jury.
Counsel, is your position just pretty basically that the statute says after arraignment you have an opportunity to be heard, and this record demonstrates he had an opportunity to consult?
Yes, Your Honor, that's my position, and that is specifically what the statute says. It does not say that this consultation must occur in open court or be simultaneous with the waiver.
Your objection is that the Court of Appeals has put conditions on that statutory language?
Correct. The Court of Appeals has basically said that Judge Logan should have stopped the proceedings here to ask a pro se defendant if he had consulted with counsel. How many other trial rights, how many other trial decisions would the 11th District Court suggest that Mr. Reese give up when he's going in and going it alone by his own choice? That would have been just a very needless exercise in the state's opinion. And finally, I would like to point out that even though he didn't give right there that particular minute, that morning, opportunity to consult with counsel, the judge then said to Mr. Reese, you know, it's going to be a lot easier to convince the state here. We'll have a lot tougher job convincing 12 people rather than just one person, and do you realize you're making that trade-off? The judge, in effect, stood in for the counsel, giving him the advice the counsel presumably would have given in this particular case. So in my opinion, that's two bad reasons why this is a bad case to take in on this particular point, is that, one, Mr. Consuldane had gone on record saying he opposed the bench trial, and number two, the judge then, in effect, stepped into Mr. Consuldane's shoes at that point and gave the defendant advice that he didn't ask for when he was formally signing off on the waiver. With respect to the issue of strict compliance, I would like to point the court's attention to the Pless case, which the court below heavily relied upon, and which the appellee in this case has heavily relied upon. And basically, in a concurring opinion, Judge Resnick noted that the strict compliance comes about when the waiver is in writing, signed by the defendant, filed with the court, and made part of the record. Well, all of those four facts are here in this case. It's all in writing, it's in the record, it's all signed, and none of that is being challenged here. The only thing that is being challenged is the next paragraph down where we note the language about the, quote, opportunity to consult with counsel. So if the court looks at the Pless case, it will see that, in fact, that there was even strict compliance by what this court has stated in the past. And before I take my seat and allow opposing counsel her time, I would also like to note Justice Stratton's dissent in the Hout case, where we had a situation where it was not time-stamped properly, the waiver was not appearing in the court file, or some such technicality like that. And the words used by Justice Stratton were, look, we're putting form over substance here. And that's certainly the case in this particular matter, where you have a defendant who has stated, I want to proceed pro se, I want to do this myself, and an appellate court imposing counsel saying, no, you got to go talk to a licensed attorney, before you make that decision. And I think that's exactly where we're going in this particular case. So I would thank you for your time.
Ms. Costanza.
Thank you.
Ms. Costanza, let me start your argument with a question. In the cases that we've applied or had to interpret and apply 2945, the majority opinions have said, in effect, that the words of the statute are clear, and we are applying the words of the statute as they're written. In this portion of the statute, the words are not as precise, but it seems to me they're clear. After the defendant has been arraigned and has had an opportunity to consult with counsel, there's no time given there. There's opportunity to consult with counsel is wide open. I mean, it's obviously here he was with his counsel at several pretrials. His counsel disagreed on the record with his client or with Mr. Reese's attempt to waive a jury trial. Why is the Court of Appeals opinion not off base on this? It seems to me that these words are very general, and it seems to me they've been complied with. Why am I wrong?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I have a very bad head cold. Could you just please repeat that so I can?
I won't repeat it all. Tell me why the words of this statute do not permit a conclusion that an opportunity was given Mr. Reese to consult with counsel before he signed the waiver of jury trial.
There's no record, Your Honor. That's one of the big problems in this case. It's not contrary to my esteemed opponent. It's not like the Hout case where there was a technicality. There's the problem with this case is the record. There is just no record. There's no record of any opportunity where it is clear that Mr. Consoldane and Mr. Reese had a direct discussion regarding what his right is. As a matter of fact, what is clear in the record.
But it only says it's had an opportunity to consult with counsel.
Yes, sir.
He had an opportunity to consult with counsel. He consulted with counsel and he dismissed his counsel.
We don't know that.
To proceed pro se, he's now his own counsel with standby counsel. But why is the statute not complied with when his counsel has even put on the record that he disagrees with Mr. Reese's decision before it was made on the date before us? But there clearly was an opportunity to consult with counsel. And isn't the statute directed at the situation where a defendant, after arraignment, makes some decision without any contact with counsel, or where for some reason had not had an opportunity to meet with counsel, to hire counsel, to be appointed counsel? Isn't that what the statute is directed at?
Yes, Your Honor, you're exactly right. And I don't mean to supplement the record, but since you've asked the question, I have to respond. This individual was kept in jail and never made bail. So he's over at the Trumbull County Jail. The arraignment process takes place in a municipal court, and at that point then they assign counsel. There's no record as if whether anybody went to the jail. All we know is that at some point Mr. Consoldane stood in front of a judge and said on the record, this is my opinion and he should not go forward. We don't know whether he stepped back and then went and attended to one of the 20 other clients that he had that day. In Trumbull County, there's a criminal day, and the courtroom is packed with defendants. That's why they have two public defenders assigned to each court. So there's no record that someone at that point then said, you know what, we should take Mr. Reese back into the jury room, and one of these public defenders needs to have a knowing and an intelligent intelligent discussion with him as to what he's about to do, and then come back and go on the record, identify yourself, I'm Attorney Goodwin, I'm Attorney Costanzo, I'm Attorney Consoldane, just had a minute to have this discussion with Mr. Reese. We are now prepared, he has been advised, and he's going to proceed. There's no record of that, Your Honor. We don't know. Mr. Consoldane could have very easily just taken the podium, said what he said. Mr. Reese then is, because he's in custody, is then literally taken by the arm by a Trumbull County Sheriff, put over in the jury box with the rest of the unbondable defendants, and Mr. Consoldane turns and attends to the next matter or steps aside, and a private attorney steps up and the next criminal case is called. And that's actually and figuratively how it goes on.
Was Mr. Consoldane's statement put on the record when he was standby counsel or when he was still his counsel?
I believe at that time he still was his counsel.
That's before he was released, dismissed.
Yes.
By...
And Your Honor, I'd like to just make a couple comments. The problem that I have and why I'm so frustrated is in this is it's everyone keeps saying it's obviously that he consulted with himself. And if you look at the record, even the prosecutor at some point raised the issue of Mr. Reese's competency to understand. And there's a discourse, and it's in my brief, between the judge and Mr. Reese. Mr. Reese thought he was going to go in front of a three-judge panel. This man did not layperson, and that's why we have this statute. It's to protect lay people from making mistakes like this, and especially somebody that perhaps, and again, I don't want to be smart or anything in front of the Supreme Court, but maybe isn't hitting on all eight cylinders.
We like smart lawyers, so you can act as smart as you like.
I think it's kind of obvious when you read this that this gentleman didn't truly understand what was going on, and when you have a prosecutor in Trumbull County, Ohio, raising the issue of the man's competency, and the judge refuses to accept the first waiver because he keeps talking about this one section that only applies to capital murder defendants.
Well, counsel, is that really a significant distinction? You have a defendant who is confusing a three-judge panel with an individual.
There's problems.
Well, I don't know that I would consider that a significant problem, especially when it's remedied by the judge saying you simply are not entitled to a three-judge panel. You will be receiving one judge to make this decision. And by the way, you probably have a better shot with 12 jurors than you do with one judge.
I don't think it's remedied when you're talking to somebody that might be hearing other voices in his head. I've seen that happen.
Well, we're talking about this case. We're
right.
Not talking about your other cases.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
This is just within the record that we have before us, and I don't have any information that this individual had questions about other parts of this proceeding except for the number of judges he was going to go before.
I believe that there is in my brief that he does, not only does he confused about the three-judge panel, but he absolutely manifested confusion about the implications of what a jury trial waiver meant, and the court openly refused to accept his waiver because of misapprehensions. That's plural. So there was obviously other misapprehensions that were going through Mr. Reese's mind that were significant enough for the court and the prosecution at that time to recognize that there were other things that were going on. The problem is that we keep talking about his opportunity to consult. There is no record here as to whether or not this individual was ever given the true opportunity to consult. There's the prosecution has not presented any jail records. No one's ever presented to any courts whether Mr. Consoldane, this individual never made bond. And I very much take umbrage with the state's position that he had given up his right to public and private counsel. This individual did try to hire private counsel many times and was turned down because of lack of funds. That's an untrue statement, and it should not be in the record. The strict compliance is ordered on this 294505. The record is absolutely unclear. There's been verbiage about obvious interplay. There's no reflection in the record of obvious interplay. The waiving of the right to a jury in a criminal case is supposed to be treated with special care by both the legislature and the court. And over again, this court has been very strict about the statutory elements in cases where defendants are representing themselves and are going to go pro se and then waive a jury.
Ms. Costanzo, didn't Mr. Consoldain accompany Mr. Reese at least 7 of the pretrials that were held?
Again, Your Honor, I don't want to, since you've asked me the question, I'm going to
Does the record, I only want you to tell us what's in the record. I only want you to tell us what is in the record.
Okay.
Does the record reflect?
How many
pretrials Mr. Consoldain accompanied Mr. Reese?
It says that the record says that he was there 7 times, but actual, when you use the word accompany him, sir, he doesn't accompany him. He's brought over by the sheriff. And unless Mr. Consoldain physically takes the steps to walk over and take him out of the well where he's held in chains and shackles and walk him back into a room, he doesn't talk to him.
How do we know he doesn't talk to him?
Because because he's in custody and he's in the well. He sits where the jury sits in an orange jumpsuit. And they all sit together. They're all chained together. And to talk to your defendant, you have to request of the Trumbull County Sheriff to have him unshackled and taken into a room behind the judge's chambers. And that's where you talk with unbondable defendants. And there's no record that that was ever done. So the only record shows is that Mr. Consoldain came to court one day and sat where defendants and defense lawyers sit at a defense table, and that Mr. Reese was brought over from the Trumbull County Jail. And literally, they would be as close as where I am to that wall, but
So Mr. Consoldain is there in the courtroom, but he doesn't have any contact with his client.
That happens many times, sir. Yes, that happens a lot because there's so many cases on the docket that day. So they just take them as they come. There's anywhere on criminal days in Trumbull County from 6 to 35 criminal cases, and the judge gets on the bench about 9:15 and wants to be off by 11:30. And when the judge takes the bench, it goes rapidly. And I've many times lawyers have stood up and haven't even talked to their client, especially when they're in custody. That's problematic and disheartening, Your Honor. What actually happens.
Ms. Costanzo, we know
yes,
that Mr. Consoldain's advice was contrary to the desire of Mr. Reese.
Yes, sir.
So is it the lawyer then that should prevail, or is it the pro se counsel that should prevail with respect to exercising that judgment?
It's the statute and the strict interpretation of 494505.
No, you're not answering my question. If the lawyer says it's not in his best interest for this waiver to be undertaken.
Yes, sir.
Then do we foist upon Mr. Reese the lawyer's judgment, or do we permit Mr. Reese to make that judgment?
Regarding the jury waiver or pro se defending? Which issue, sir?
In this case.
Well, in this case, there were 2 issues. Number one, whether or not he should waive a jury and go in front of a 3-judge panel, and secondly, to represent himself. Do you want me to address both, one or?
Well, we know that the court didn't accept the waiver for the 3-judge panel, don't we?
Right.
And so at that point, that waiver was refused by the court.
Correct.
And that was done so that Mr. Reese would not be misled as to the outcome if, in fact, he did exercise a waiver.
Correct.
Then we know at a later point, after he had the opportunity to consult with Mr. Consoldain and consider that Mr. Consoldain didn't want that to be done, he exercised independent judgment and indicated he would accept a 1-judge.
See, that's where you and I differ, sir. I don't believe at any time Mr. Reese had a true, viable opportunity to consult with counsel. That's the problem. If Mr. Reese would have been...
What would you say would be a true viable opportunity?
A true viable opportunity is literally, on, and the record would reflect that, as many Trumbull County criminal cases do.
So you're saying if there were a journal entry to that effect?
No, no, not at all. It'd be in the record, sir, and this is the way it happens.
How would it be in the record?
It would go like this. Your Honor, I haven't had a chance to speak to Mr. Reese. He's in custody. Can we move to the next case, sir, while I have a moment at your discretion to allow the sheriffs to take Mr. Reese into the back to have an opportunity to speak with him? Just like that, other discourses are all on the record, and that's on the record. I myself have asked for that permission.
So you think that that opportunity has to be done immediately prior to the exercise of the waiver?
Pardon me?
Your view is the discourse must be on the record immediately prior to the exercise of the waiver.
It doesn't have to be immediately prior to the waiver, but it has to be at some point before the waiver, after arraignment, but at some point before the waiver is done.
Thank you.
I'd just like to say that this court on many occasions has strictly applied each statutory element in cases where defendants are representing themselves. Conference with counsel was clearly indicated. Mr. Reese vacillated. He was under a mistaken belief that there was a three-judge panel, not only Judge Logan, but the prosecutor many times advised Mr. Reese that he was incorrect, generally and specifically with regard to Mr. Reese. There is no major disruption in the pretrial hearing. If the attorney would have been said, can I please take this gentleman out of custody and go speak
with him? Well, counsel, then you see no distinction between someone who's operating pro se and a defendant who is represented by counsel and the application of this portion of the statute. When someone has appropriately and properly exercised their right to waive counsel and is proceeding pro se, whether that happens at the arraignment or whether that happens at some juncture during the proceedings, you would say that there is still the obligation for some attorney to be consulted in some meaningful, and that's yet to be determined, way, and that be part of the transcript of the proceedings in order for the pro se defendant to knowingly waive their right to a jury trial.
Absolutely. I think at any time that you're going to waive one
and
of the
how does Feretta then impact on that?
Feretta is mostly about self-representation, which you also have a right to, but I believe that we're here to discuss a much bigger right, which is your absolute right whether or not to have a jury hear your most important criminal matter or to go alone in front of a judge. And that's what I believe we're here for today.
I think the question, doesn't he waive that right when he decides to proceed pro se?
With all due respect,
the statute doesn't anticipate this situation, at least the words don't.
Pardon me?
The words of the statute don't seem to contemplate this situation.
Yeah.
Where the defendant decides to go to proceed as his own attorney, doesn't he waive that right then?
No, I think the right to a jury trial is one of the rights that is why this country was founded, instead of some star chamber.
Counsel, what would happen if there was no standby attorney here and he was pro se, appropriately so, and no court has appointed a standby attorney? There's no licensed attorney, and this individual is competent and proceeding pro se. Who would he or she consult with at that point?
Whomever the court would take a break and give a call to and have them come over.
So at that point, the court has to appoint an attorney to someone who's proceeding pro se?
Yes, Your Honor. That's 2945.05. Strict compliance says that they have to be have the opportunity.
So you can you're asking a court then to selectively accept pro se representation depending on what is taking place during the proceedings.
we're here on whether or not you have a right to a jury trial.
I understand that. And not all defendants waive the right to a jury trial. So, again, right. In this particular case, the waiver of a jury trial is at issue.
Correct.
And because that presents itself, you want to impose the presence of a licensed attorney, even though we have an appropriately and constitutionally done waiver of counsel.
I'm not imposing, Your Honor. 29-4505 specifically says the law mandates, and the seven of you yourselves have repeatedly over and over again listed the five things that have to occur in a plethora of cases. I'm not talking about some time stamp like in the Hout case. I'm talking about something that is our law.
Well, the distinction here is the pro se status of this defendant, and that's what this crux, this is what it hinges upon, is the pro se status and whether this statute anticipated application to a pro se defendant.
Your Honor, I can't answer as to what the statute did or did not anticipate, but my only position, the only reason why I am here is because 29-4505 succinctly states that it doesn't matter who it is and what position they're in. When you go to waive the most major of rights, the most honored of rights, and that is your right by trial to jury, that you have the opportunity to consult with a licensed member of the bar. And I'm not trying to foist upon courts time constraints or disrupting their dockets. It takes a minute. Then you just move on and say, okay, take him back into the box. Call the public defender or the court appointed and say, we have a gentleman that wants to waive his right to jury. Would you please go over to the jail and consult with him? And we will have a hearing tomorrow morning, tomorrow afternoon, whenever. Bring the gentleman over. Did you consult with this lawyer? Yes, I did. Do you still want to waive your right to jury? Yes, I do. Attorney so-and-so, did you consult with him? Yes, I did. Did you understand what he said? Yes. Do you feel he knowingly, intelligently, and voluntarily is waiving his right to jury? Yes, I do. That's it. It's over.
Your future
time. It doesn't take very much to uphold what this beautiful room and what the Constitution demands and what 29-4505 demands. It's just, it's your right to a jury, sir.
Thank you, Ms. Costanzo. You've used your time.
Thank you.
Ms. Anders, you've saved 30 seconds of your time.
And in those 30 seconds, I'd like to point the court's attention to trial docket number 18, wherein the defendant personally handwrote upon his counsel waiver form that he was also waiving his right to appointed counsel. So in other words, this concept of where, okay, you don't want to talk to Attorney Consuldane, that's fine. Attorney Smith, you come over here and help out this guy. That's been signed off on in writing by the defendant. First thing I want to point out. Second thing I want to point out before I sit down is
That's in the record, I assume, what you're referring.
Yes, trial docket 18, and I would further refer the court to page 47 of the transcript wherein this very waiver is discussed and where it's on record is he doesn't want to just get rid of Mr. Consuldane, he wants rid of all lawyers, and I will tell you that, you know, if the judge just grabs any lawyer in the courtroom and says, oh, go help this guy decide if he wants to waive a jury trial, it would be tantamount to malpractice for that attorney to stand in with no discovery, no knowledge of the facts, no knowledge of the defendants, and in, as Ms. Costanzo is suggesting, a minute's time, decide whether or not to waive a jury trial.
Well, she's suggesting Mr. Consuldane did exactly that. He never consulted with him and put on the record that he disagreed with Mr. Reese's decision to waive the trial or a jury.
Well, Your Honor, I think the record contradicts that there was no discussion between Mr. Consuldane and this defendant. If you look at page 13 of my brief, you'll see there are several episodes where I've cited in the record where Mr. Reese and Mr. Consuldane were privately engaging in discussions regarding this particular case. Now, does it say in any of those that, yeah, they were discussing specifically the jury waiver? No, it does not. But this picture that's been painted that Tommy Reese is dragged dragged into court, chained in the jury box while Attorney Consoldain goes and talks to all his other clients, everybody but this guy. That is simply not what has happened in this particular case. The record reflects that he was at the jail at least twice, that he consulted on a motion to suppress, that the reason this thing blew up and Tommy Reese wanted rid of Tony Consoldain is because Attorney Consoldain apparently told him, I can't win this case for you. It's a dead bang loser. Why? Well, because you've stabbed two people in front of four witnesses.
Let's go to the legal thing. It seems to me your point is that the record indicates that there was private time between Mr. Reese and Mr. Consoldain, and that would be the opportunity at which time Mr. Reese can express his desire with Mr. Consoldain. We don't know what the discussion was, but opportunity is a very broad, broad word.
Yes, Your Honor. That's absolutely correct. That is my point. And I realize I've used up my time, and I would thank the court for the opportunity to address this issue before you today, and I would again request that you reverse the decision of the 11th District Court of Appeals.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.